They're located at 61 Main Street in Centerbrook. Artist as curator in New Haven, Keller Liddell Gallery will host a group exhibit featuring 19 New England artists through July 28th. The gallery's hours are Thursday through Sunday from noon to 5 p.m., and they're located at 873 Whaley Avenue in New Haven. Members Art Exhibit in Stratford, the Shelton Art League will hold a members art exhibition displaying its members' artworks in various mediums at the Raymond E. Baldwin Center through September 26, and they're located at 1000 West Broad Street in Stratford. And under Festivals, in Manchester, 8 short plays will be performed live for the first time at Manchester Playwright Festival at Cheney Hall on Friday, July 12th at 7 o'clock p.m. In North Stonington, the North Stonington Agricultural Fair features a livestock pull, circus acts, arts and crafts, and music shows. It is held on July 11th and 12th from 5 to 11 p.m., July 13th from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., and July 14th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. They're located at 21 Wysup Road in North Stonington. The Greater Hartford Shakespeare Festival in West Hartford, Capital Classics Shakespeare Festival, will feature 2 full-length outdoor productions of Hamlet and The Taming of the Shrew at University of St. Joseph until August 4th. They're located at 1678 Asylum Avenue in West Hartford. Under Summer Food Festival in Derby, Our Lady Queen of the Apostles Parish's Summer Food Festival will be held from Thursday, July 11th through Saturday, July 13th from 5 to 9 p.m. There will be games, a raffle, live music, and food items for purchase, including empanadas, fried dough, pasta, hamburgers, and more. They're located at 212 Elizabeth Street in Derby. Under Miscellaneous, Recycle Your Bicycle and Musical Instrument in Hamden, West Haven, and East Haven. The Greater New Haven Probus Club will host a donation drive for bikes and musical instruments in 3 locations on Sunday, July 14th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. They're going to be at the Cole Shopping Center, 2380 Dixwell Avenue in Hamden, Lorenzo's Restaurant at 39 Elm Street in West Haven, and Goody's Hardware at 540 Main Street in East Haven. And that's today's edition of Lives and Times. If you need more information on the obituaries I've read, please call the Chris Listener line at 860-727-9579. I'm Maggie Lawler. So long until next time.
If you would like to make a donation to Chris Radio in honor of a friend or relative, please mail it to Chris Radio, 315 Windsor Avenue, Windsor, Connecticut, 06095.
Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Steve Parker. Today I'll be reading from the June 17, 2024 edition of People Magazine. Let's start by taking a look at the photograph on the front of the magazine. And here we go. Hugh Jackman. This guy's amazing. The Hugh Jackman interview. And this is by Ryan Reynolds. And let's see. Friends for 17 years, the Deadpool and Wolverine stars talk about fatherhood, getting superheroes sexy, and their modern bromance. That's with a B, bromance. We rely on each other. Great great picture of Hugh Jackman here. Gray T-shirt, sleeves up about halfway to his elbows. Little scruffiness on his face. The hair brushed back. It looks like, yeah, he's wearing some sort of superhero glove on there that's blue and yellow and looks like a superhero glove. Head kind of cocked a little bit there. It takes up a good portion of the front of the paper. I keep saying that. Of the magazine. This is two collectible covers, special Wolverine edition. Very, very cool. Two collectible covers. That's why we've got, I guess maybe it comes in another format too. And we also see Lady Gaga in the right-hand corner, In Love and Making New Music. And the latest fight over Graceland, how Riley Keough is protecting Elvis's legacy. And that's what we have on the front cover of the magazine. And let's go inside and see what we have with Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds. These guys are just the bromance. I love when they call it that, a bromance. Secrets of their friendship and big explosions like you'd see on the old television shows. They're inside a cloud and the explosions. We see Hugh Grant on the left, Ryan Reynolds on the right. They're both in the left-hand corner. We see Hugh Jackman in his costume, yellow, kind of a mustard yellow with all kinds of protection on it and big long gloves. And to the right, we see Ryan Reynolds in his costume. The Deadpool and Wolverine stars open up about reuniting for their summer blockbuster, battling nerves off screen and being there for each other for nearly two decades. This story is by Andrea Mondell. Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman are trying to very hard to keep their People Cover interview on track, but they just can't help themselves. One thing that we have in common is gracing the cover of this magazine, as I believe it says, world's sexiest man, says Reynolds, 47, sitting next to his friend of more than 17 years, Jackman Cox, an eyebrow. I thought it was universe. Having both held the actual title of People's Sexiest Man Alive is but one of their many common denominators. This summer, the two dads, Jackman, his father, Oscar, 24, and Ava, 19, with ex Deborah Lee, 68, while Reynolds' family with Blake Lively, 36, includes his kids, James, 9, Inez, 7, Betty, 4, and 1-year-old, whose name has not been made public, reunite for the highly anticipated Deadpool and Wolverine in theaters July 26. The third raucously R-rated film in the Deadpool franchise. For the action film, Reynolds had to persuade Jackman, 55, to revive the X-Man character that he'd firmly put to bed with 2017's critically acclaimed Logan. Amid their long-standing fake feud, they regularly and lovingly roast each other on social media. The two offer mutual rock-solid support while navigating impressive Hollywood careers, family, and life's tougher moments. Here, the superhero stars sit down in New York City to interview each other. Ryan Reynolds asks, "Okay, so where to begin, Hugh?" "I've known you a very long time," Hugh Jackman says. "I just want to be clear, I have 9 publicists here," Reynolds says, "each of which is equipped with a taser aimed squarely at me. I'm going to jump right in. As a true Hollywood narcissist, I'm going to task you with a question. I'm going to task you a question that's about you, that's really about me. What's your first memory of us meeting?" Jackman says, "Was it 2007 or 2008? I can't remember, but it was on the set of Origins, Wolverine, and we were outside of Sydney." Origins Wolverine. Reynolds says, "I remember that first day showing up in Sydney. That was the biggest movie I'd ever worked on at that point. I was blown away, and I was nervous as hell. I was walking through the trailers, jet-lagged, disoriented, feeling really green and kind of out of my depth, and there was no script to look at because 2007 and 08 with the writer's strike. It was just like, what's going to happen? And I heard my name, Ryan, in between these trailers as I was walking, and it was you. And just the fact that you knew my name meant so much to me. You came over, you gave me a big hug, and you said, 'Welcome aboard.' I learned so much about what it means to lead a set when I watched you, what it means to be gracious to not just the people that can change your destiny, but everybody. And honestly, it left the biggest impression on me. I thought, man, if I'm ever even remotely lucky enough to be in Hugh Jackman's position in life, these are the lessons that you want to get into your DNA and as soon as humanly possible." Jackman says, "Thank you, man." Reynolds says, "And then Who knew that now my stardom would completely eclipse yours? Jackman laughs, says, completely. Reynolds says, and you would just be one of the many grunting stepping stones I've used to hoist myself up into a better stature. Jackman, and I remember the first day of Deadpool and Wolverine, you did the same thing. You came over and you went, Steve! Reynolds says, so what's it like being over the age of 45 and trying to look like a superhero and move like an even younger Tom Holland? Jackman, I love that way. I love that you somehow bracketed us together in that question very generously by saying over 45. Reynolds, well, I have some insight into you being 55 and doing Deadpool and Wolverine. I couldn't believe what you did physically for this movie. Not just the aesthetic transformation. You hit your marks in those fight scenes with speed and confidence, the likes of which I have never seen. I don't care if you were 25, 35, 45, or 55. It was lightning. Jackman, I had to get to the point probably 10 years ago where I was like, I'm not enjoying it. It was hurting. It was tough, but I've had a break, and I've been doing a lot of dance. I've been doing stage shows like The Music Man on Broadway. And so when I came back to it, it was really fun. My body was a little sore at the beginning, but I was thrilled that my body was still responding. The hardest bit is the food. I have to eat a lot. For me, for my body type, since I'm naturally skinny, to get the size on. That's the bit that does my head in. Reynolds says, yeah, that's me too, the 5-6 meals a day. To some people, I'm sure they're like, well, that sounds great, but it's not the type of food you would necessarily enjoy. The one thing I've learned as I've gotten older in this business is to listen to the movie, particularly the physicality. When Hugh Jackman is coming at you at 150 Australian miles per hour, you feel like there's no way you're going to be dead in 4 seconds. Thank God I'm in a mask, because underneath the mask, my face is going, oh, God! Jackman says, I do remember you saying there's a lot of repressed rage in there. Reynolds says, what was your reaction when you found out that you were in the world's sexiest, that you were the world's sexiest man? Jackman was people's sexiest man alive in 2008, and Ryan took the crown in 2010. Jackman says, who paid for this? How much did this cost? I don't know about you, but before you were famous, did the girls ever go, oh my God, this guy's so sexy? Reynolds says, no, no. Jackman says, of my group of mates growing up, let's say there's 7. I would have been voted on a good day number 3. I might have gotten a bronze medal. Reynolds says, as a fellow immigrant to this land, Reynolds was born in Vancouver, what do you miss most about Australia? Jackman says, my family. I don't see my brothers who live there nearly enough. My lifestyle is Sydney. I wake up and have coffee, unbelievable coffee. I work out, jump in the ocean as the sun's coming up, and I think, why am I not here every morning? Reynolds says, my kids have Canadian passports as well. It's a point of pride of theirs. They tell people, oh, I'm half Canadian, half American. They've also spent huge amounts of their formative years in Canada, particularly Vancouver. We shot Deadpool and Deadpool 2 there. It's Deadpool 2 there. I had only one child on Deadpool, and I had 2 on Deadpool 2. But hopefully we don't do a Deadpool 8, because I don't want 8 kids. Jackman says, mate, you've been pretty open with your anxiety struggles, which I really applaud you for. Do you find being a dad makes it better or worse? Reynolds says, I think it makes it better because your focus is less on yourself and more on your kids. I know you know that too. Jackman says, yes. Reynolds says, and now I love that I've had anxiety because when I see my kids experiencing some of that, which is probably genetic, I know how to address it in a way that is compassionate. I know I can't just fix it. And my job benefits greatly people who have anxiety are constantly thinking into the future. What if this happens? What if that happens? When we're shooting Deadpool and Wolverine, I'm not just shooting the movie. I'm also sitting in the audience as its harshest critic going, I don't like that. I don't buy that. So anxiety creates that ecosystem of awareness that I wouldn't otherwise have. Jackman says, I think it takes courage to speak about it, and it's helped a lot of people because a lot of people come up to me talking about you. Reynolds says, oh, wow. Jackman says, and I say, shut up. I'm not interested. And Reynolds laughs. That tracks. Jackman says, but a lot of them will say, it's helped me. Reynolds, I think men too. I don't know why men have issues talking about their feelings. Jackman, recently I talked to my kids. I used to be a little bit old school. I thought, don't burden them if you are anxious. So you've got an opening night and you're hosting the Oscars for three weeks before I got a little distant. And then someone said to me, but your kids don't know that you've got the Oscars. Maybe they're thinking you're mad with them or they've done something. I had to make an uncomfortable telephone call yesterday, and I actually just said to my son, I've got to make this uncomfortable phone call. I'm a bit nervous about it. If I seem a bit off, that's why. And he goes, oh. And then he said, how'd the call go, Dad? And I said, I feel so much better. Reynolds says, and he feels a part of your world. Deadpool and Wolverine director Sean Levy told me something that stuck with me forever. People tend to only talk about their wins, but it's important for your kids to know that you lose. You don't get what you want all the time. It's so important that they see that and they don't just hear, oh, Dad nailed it, because you lose so much more than you win. Jackman, last question. We've been friends for almost 20 years. What's the secret sauce to a long-lasting Hollywood friendship? And Reynolds says, I think it's not too dissimilar to having a partner or a marriage. Since the day I met you, I am genuinely rooting for you all the time. I want you to win. Jackman says, same. Reynolds says, and I know you to be a person that often puts offers others in front of yourself, and it's not a show. And since the day we met in Sydney, I root for you. It's the same way I feel about Blake, as I'm rooting for her. I know she's rooting for me, and it's why we're so connected. Jackman, I agree. For me, friendship is you feel you can say anything, the stuff you're ashamed, embarrassed about, anything. And ever since I've known you, and I would say, particular in like the last 5-10 years, we've had more time where we go for walks, and you're an unbelievable listener. So you can tell me anything, and I can tell you anything. And I don't feel like you're going to be judging or necessarily giving me the answer. Do this. And I think that has been the key. Reynolds, we rely on each other for the real kind of advice that you want. Jackman says, in your apartment that you lend me. Reynolds says, the roommate that keeps on giving. Hugh Jackman. It's a great, great little back and forth between those two guys. All right, let's see what else we've got in this latest edition of People Magazine for June 17, 2024. Hey, it's summertime. We got to check out this next story here. Music Addiction and Family Feuds. The Beach Boys look back. And we got this old cover of one of their albums where they're all standing there with their arms around a surfboard. The iconic band's surviving members reflect on more than six decades of endless summer. This story is by Jordan Runthawk. We see these. This picture here is actually looks like one of the, it was the front of one of their albums. And we see the boys in the band. From the left, Brian Wilson, Mike Love, Dennis Wilson, Carl Wilson, and former bandmate David Marks in 1962. And on the right, we see a picture that's more recent. We see, Al Jardine, David Marks, producer Frank Marshall, Brian, former bandmate Blondie, Blondie Chaplin, Love and Johnston at the Beach Boys premiere May 21st in L.A., For those who were around for the early days of rock and roll, the first image they probably saw of the Beach Boys was on the cover of their 1962 debut album, Surfin' Safari. Holding a surfboard in Malibu, their eager teenage faces gleefully survey the horizon and a future they could scarcely imagine. Last fall, more than 60 years later, the surviving members reunited on the same beach to toast their legacy. The scene is the centerpiece of the new Disney Plus documentary, The Beach Boys, streaming now. I saw that was great. The film details how family ties kept the band composed of brothers Brian, Carl, and Dennis Wilson, the cousin Mike Love and friend Al Jardine, together through ups and downs as they made music history. It really brought me back to those days with the boys. The fun of the music, Brian Wilson, age 81, says of the film in a statement. He attended the L.A. premiere on May 21st, flanked by his children and bandmates, his first public appearance since a judge approved a conservatorship because of an unspecified neurocognitive disorder, appointing his longtime representatives Lee Ann Hard and Gene Sivers as co-conservators. Despite Brian's health struggles and the death of his wife, Melinda Ledbetter, in January at age 77, those close to him say he stays healthy with physical therapy and still makes music. Here, the band shares their story of survival with people. Family harmony. The Beach Boys were born in the back of the Wilson family car as Brian, Dennis, and Carl sang to pass the time on drives through their hometown of Hawthorne, California. At Christmas, they showcased their talents during parties at the home of cousin Mike Love. "We would get together and harmonize," Love 83 recalls. Music was a family hobby. This passion blossomed into an obsession for Brian, who sat at the piano for hours dissecting complex vocal arrangements of jazz groups. His efforts helped bring harmony to an unhappy home. Wilson patriarch Murray was a strict disciplinarian, prone to anger outbursts and physical abuse. The quickest way to Murray's heart was through music, and family sing-alongs provided fleeting moments of peace. In addition to his brothers and cousin, Brian recruited pal Al Jardine to join. "We clicked immediately," Jardine 81 says. "We had a band and a new family. California dreams." A catalyst for the group came in 1961 when the Wilson parents took a vacation to Mexico. Using money left behind for emergencies, the teens rented instruments to record early compositions. "We were desperate to begin to play our stuff," says Jardine. One of the tracks they recorded was Surfin', inspired by a new coastal fad. It earned them a record deal and provided the group with a brand, though only Dennis actually surfed. Other songs were more true to their experiences. Fun, Fun, Fun was inspired by the local Foster's Freeze hamburger stand where they hung out. This familiar subject matter helped fans connect with the songs. "It was just a phenomenal time growing up in Southern California," Love says. Our environment gave rise to the subject matter that we put in our songs, surf, and cars. Riding the Waves. Brian thrived at his role as the Beach Boys' chief musical creator. In 2 years, he wrote and produced 5 albums packed with 10 top 40 hits. "When you're in the presence of genius, it's pretty heavy," Jardine says. By 1964, the pace became too much. After suffering a nervous breakdown while on tour, Brian retired from performing to hone his skills as a composer and producer. The result? 1966 Pet Sounds, considered one of the greatest albums of all time. Bruce Johnston, 81, who joined the band in 1965 to fill in for Brian on stage, recalls playing it to their friendly rivals, the Beatles. John Lennon and Paul McCartney listened to the album twice, he says. They just totally flipped out and were raving about it. Late that year, they unleashed Good Vibrations, an ambitious song that took more than 6 months to complete. "That was the top," says Love. "It was all about peace, love, and harmony." Transition and Betrayal is the caption here. By 1969, Wilson patriarch Murray, who managed the group's music publishing company, believed the Beach Boys' best days were behind them. Without consulting the band, he sold their publishing rights for a pittance, inciting inter-family legal squabbles. Brian grew increasingly overwhelmed by the mental health struggles that would sideline him for the next few decades. By the early 70s, he had largely confined himself to bed while the band soldiered on in his home studio. "Brian was a recluse for a while," Love says. Other people came forward with songs. It became more of a democratic process. This caption, "Death of a Beach Boy." From the outset, Dennis embodied the free-spirited nature of the era and the risks that he had entailed. In 1968, he brought a pair of hitchhikers back to his Hollywood home, only returned later to discover that they'd moved in the rest of their hippie clan, headed by Charles Manson. Ultimately, Dennis abandoned his home to rid himself of the group, who would go on their murder spree months later. Guilt over over his connection to the Manson family exasperated him. his substance abuse. He'd been drinking when, in December of 1983, he drowned while diving in Marina del Rey, California. He was buried at sea after special dispensation from President Ronald Reagan. This caption, America's banned. Reagan had grown close to his home state's favorite sons and frequently invited the Beach Boys to perform July 4th concerts on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. in the 80s. The Beach Boys are kind of a musical Disneyland, Johnston says, marveling at the multiple generations of fans he sees at the sold-out shows they play today. Love recently heard one of their songs on the radio. He says listening to his younger self harmonizing with his bandmates, including Carl Wilson, who died of cancer in 1968, evoked a sense of wonder. It sounded like angels. Great article there. I'm a big Beach Boy fan anyways. A lot of great pictures of them throughout the article as all different kinds of ages and stuff. And we see President Reagan, one of the shots there, their dad Murray, the boys when they were just really boys. So young in that picture there. Brian directing. And then we have the old shot of all of them. We're on the Ed Sullivan Show with hot rods all around them. And they were wearing those Pendleton striped shirts. And just so many great pictures there. That's Summertime. That's the band. And just to touch upon a little article here, Steve Guttenberg, I'm sure a lot of you remember him. Why I dropped everything for my dad. When the Police Academy star's father got sick, he trained to be a dialysis tech so he could treat him at home. He was my hero. And this is by Jillian Telling. Great shot of Steve Guttenberg here in a kind of a teal sweater. A loving son. There were times I didn't want the pain of seeing him get weaker, says Guttenberg. In 2024, and we have an inset here with his father, Stanley, in 2010. But his story isn't just about the pain. It's also the laughter and joy of his life. As Steve Guttenberg became a movie star in the 1980s with hits like Cocoon, the Police Academy franchise, and Three Men and a Baby, one man was his biggest fan. My dad loved my success, the actor, 65, recalls of his father, Stanley, who had been an NYPD officer and later worked as an engineer before his death at 89 in 2022. He went to all my premieres. He had such a great time with it. The fandom was mutual, so much so that when Stanley was diagnosed with kidney disease in 2017, the actor didn't hesitate to start waking up at 3 a.m. and driving round trip from L.A. to Phoenix, where Stanley lived, once a week to escort his father to dialysis treatments. There was no thought to it at all, he says. My dad was my idol. Now Guttenberg is honoring him with his new memoir, Time to Thank, Caregiving for My Hero, which tells the story of his upbringing and being with Stanley during his final days. My dad came home instead of going out with the guys, says Guttenberg, whose mom, Ann, still lives in Arizona. He loved his wife, his kids. He taught me how to drive and to shave, how to talk to girls, how to tie my shoes, and to be respectful, kind, thoughtful. He was my greatest teacher. Just a great story there about a love. He left his whole career behind to go take care of his dad. Taking a look at the five things we're talking about. Number one, the Masked Singer winner is Vanessa Hudgens revealed herself as Goldfish after singing Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me on the May 22nd finale, winning the vote and edging out Ginny and Georgia star Scott Porter, who was disguised as Candy Machine Gumball. Okay. Number two, Scratch and Smell. France's newly issued stamp will leave you running to your nearest boulangerie. Nearly 600,000 baguette-scented stamps have been created to celebrate the country's beloved bread. It's a good one. Number three, Christopher Goes Colonial. Law and Order Organized Crime star Christopher Maloney has gone from New York detective to Englishman. The actor faked a British accent and dressed in colonial garb for Mine Hill Distillery's comical ad. And number four, The Rock gets back in a ring. Dwayne Johnson is getting gloved up. A first look at the upcoming film The Smashing Machine, in which he headlines alongside his Jungle Cruise co-star Emily Blunt, shows the former WWE champion as mixed martial arts fighter Mark Keir. And number five, Venus is a Barbie. For Venus Williams, life in plastic is fantastic. as part of Mattel's new campaign honoring women in sports, the tennis champ, along with eight other groundbreaking female athletes, has been turned into a Barbie. And one of the quotes she has here, "I'm honored to be recognized as a sports role model," Venus says. Those are the five things we're talking about.